Hello, I'm Bob Welch. This is number 0315, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0315. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Pete Geiger, publisher and editor of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac. There's so much in the book, but people always look toward the weather.
I think we do a good job. I think the last three winters, I think we've been spot on. It kind of started, too, with the Super Bowl prediction when there was the outdoor Super Bowl and, you know, what was the weather going to be? I mean, it said it would be a storm the 1st or the 3rd of February, and sure enough, it came in right smack in the middle, and while it didn't ruin the game, it stuck everybody in New Jersey. So, you know, people are genuinely interested in the weather, and it transcends ages and genders and everything else. So, Farmer's Almanac, Canadian Farmer's Almanac in particular, are known for its weather, but you know what? There's so much more in the book.
Larry Milbury is the author of Aviation in Canada, the CAE story.
It seemed a little bit of an obscure company to start with. It was really in the war surplus business for the first few years, buying a lot of old junk from Second World War, scrapping it out, recycling it, finding new uses for it. And gradually, kind of almost by accident, found itself in the flight simulation business.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. There is a controversy in Times Square involving some topless painted women.
Along come these broads, and they dress themselves up by painting their bodies like the American flag. And what they do is you, the unsuspecting or the naive tourist, comes along, and they say, how would you like me to stand next to you so that a member of your family can take a picture? And you say, golly, that sounds like fun. So you do it. And the minute they take the picture, they're going to ask you for money. And if you don't give them some money, there's going to be a big scene. So all of a sudden, like cockroaches, they're all over Times Square. And the worst part about it is, and excuse me for being a male chauvinist pig, these broads are really ugly.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0315 was Bob Welch, host of Dinner Jazz from 6:30 to 9 p.m. weeknights, followed by WDEV Score, sports and rock from 9 p.m. to midnight, all on WDEV in Waterbury, Vermont. Thank you very much, Bob, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Police and residents in southeast Portland, Oregon, are trying to identify a man seen defecating outside an office building several times in the past month. They're calling him the Portland Pooper. Business owners, whose cameras captured the man in the act, plastered photos of the suspect's face around the neighborhood. Now, police have identified that man as the suspect, and they're saying he could face charges of offensive littering. I'll say. I find it interesting that he has toilet paper with him. It's very pre-planned, said Katrina Salazar, who works at a nearby hair salon. She goes on to say, you just don't know what to expect around here. People, they like to do their own thing. They kind of march to the beat of their own drum. Gee, I'm wondering if the cops are sending the substance off to gather a DNA analysis. And by the way, I like alliteration, so the Portland Pooper is a great name. Good thing he's not doing this in other Oregon towns like, say, Sherwood. On to Beijing. Police in Beijing said a woman who wasn't allowed to bring a bottle of expensive cognac on a plane chugged the entire bottle at the airport security. Police said a woman identified by the surname Xiao had a bottle of Remy Martin XO Excellence cognac in her carry-on luggage at Beijing Capital International Airport when security workers told her the item would not be allowed on the plane. Xiao apparently decided to drink the entire bottle on the spot rather than allow it to go to waste, and police officers said they found her shouting and screaming on the floor at her boarding gate, unable to stand on her own. The woman was taken in a wheelchair to a room where she could rest after the captain of her Wenzhou-bound flight decided not to allow her on board. Xiao, who police said had purchased the liquor for about $200 during a trip to the United States and was at the airport to transfer to a domestic flight, woke up a few hours later and thanked police for taking care of her. They say she was not detained or charged with any crime. You know, if downing an entire bottle of liquor at the airport isn't a gateway to alcoholism and a cry for help, then I don't know what else is. Or she could be just, you know, cheap and know the value of a dollar. Anyway, customs officials at the border between El Paso, Texas and Juarez, Mexico arrested two men and charged them with smuggling 13 pounds of marijuana. Not unusual, you might say, except that the men were smuggling the pot from Texas to Mexico. Mexican officials say the car had been chosen for a random inspection and agents arrested a Mexican citizen and a U.S. citizen when the drugs were found. Now, a month before, the local newspaper notes, a woman from El Paso was arrested with a kilo of crystal meth that she allegedly smuggled into Juarez. Okay, then. So it's not so unusual. But still, it sounds like bringing coals to Newcastle, doesn't it? Yeah. An unidentified man in Manchester, England, called police when he noticed a ladder had been tilted up against his window at 11:30 p.m. As he was on the phone to 999 dispatchers, he peeked out the window and saw two men getting ready to climb up to his window, but they stopped to talk first. The man opened his window and quickly pulled the ladder in, giving them nothing to climb. Police are looking for the men. Well, clearly, they are looking for low-level criminals. And talk about your bad day. 25-year-old John Knight was driving his Volvo station wagon down Church Street through San Francisco's No Valley neighborhood at about 10:30 in the morning when he came across a strange scene. A heavyset woman stood wrapped in a blanket surrounded by medical personnel. Suddenly, the woman whipped off the blanket and threw it at the medics, revealing that she was completely naked. Then she turned around and noticed Knight still stopped and now shocked behind the wheel about 50 feet away. She walked directly toward me, he said. She walks up to the hood of my car and begins stomping on my windshield completely naked. The woman, who Knight estimated was about 250 pounds, cracked his windshield with the first stomp. She got a couple more in before plainclothes officers pulled her off and handcuffed her as she screamed. Apparently, the woman had stripped on a commuter train earlier in the morning for no good reason, and it was pure coincidence that Knight pulled up at that intersection at that exact moment. The insurance company didn't really know what to make of it, Knight said. I'm assuming that woman was taken to the hospital, by the way, for a checkup from the neck up. At the very least, that is due. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a disappointed visitor to Yellowstone National Park left a note on a feedback form asking rangers to train bears to hang out where they can be seen. The note, shared on Reddit by a person who purportedly is a friend of an employee at Yellowstone Lodge, was written on the bottom of a feedback form for trouble with maintenance and housekeeping. The note reads, "Our visit was wonderful, but we never saw any bears. Please train your bears to be where guests can see them. This was an expensive trip to not get to see bears." A Redditor commenting on the post said the note reminded them of a quote from a Yellowstone Park ranger. "There is considerable overlap between the intelligence of the smartest bears and the stupidest tourists." Yep. There's really not much I can add to that, is there? Anyway, let's get to our first guest, shall we? It's that time of year again. The latest edition of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac is now out. The 2016 edition is available. This is a publication that has been going strong since 1818. Every year, millions of faithful readers seek out the down-home wit, wisdom, and proven advice that has made the Farmer's Almanac a household name. On the line with us right now, once again, from Maine, is Pete Geiger, the publisher and editor of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Peter. Nice to be with you again.
Nice to have you back on the program with us. Now, we always talk about the Farmer's Almanac each and every year. And, of course, one of the things people talk about mostly when it comes to the almanac is the weather. So I want to start with that right now by proving a basic point. And that is, we've had some wacky weather over the last year or so, and it was a snowy winter, it's been a hot and steamy summer, and some thunder showers. And people always say, well, how accurate can the Farmer's Almanac be? And I opened it up to August, which is where we are right now, and I look at what it talks about for certain days of this month for where I live here in Quebec. And it mentions violent thunderstorms in the Quebec and the Maritimes. And the only thing I can say about this is, you've been off by 2 days.
I have. Oh, only 2 days. That's good.
2 days. I mean,
local guys.
It's
as you know, we do it 2 years in advance, and I am going to be off by a day or so sometimes. But you know what? You're planning long range. I think we're the experts on long range weather. So.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I when I was flipping through it, I said, how can they be so accurate? I mean, it's just amazing how accurate this thing is. It's great.
Well, I think we do a good job. I think the last three winters, I think we've been spot on, and it kind of started too with the Super Bowl prediction when there was going to be outdoor Super Bowl, and you know, what was the weather going to be? And I said it'd be a storm the first or the third of February, and sure enough, it came in right smack in the middle. And while it didn't ruin the game, it stuck everybody in New Jersey. So, you know, people are genuinely interested in the weather, and it transcends ages and genders and everything else. So the Farmer's Almanac, and the Canadian Farmer's Almanac in particular, are known for its weather. But you know what? There's so much more in the book, and I know you know that. That we're out now. It's got the orange and green cover. We're in stores everywhere, and we're also online. I mean, I know this is online, and you can get us. You can get an app. You can get us electronically. You can get us down to your Kindle. We get 850,000 Facebook likes. I got 25,000 Twitter followers. I mean, it's amazing how we've gone from just the book, which everybody who's in print has to do something beyond print, and how the brand itself has sort of exploded with all of the technologies that are available, and it puts more pressure on us to continue to get more information, but on the other hand, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, well, the reason why I started out talking about the weather is, as I said, the weather has been so diverse over the last year or so. So for you to be that accurate with such extremes in weather, you know, no one really talks about the weather prognosticator in Nevada. You're a meteorologist in Nevada, big deal. Nothing ever changes. But you...
isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Well, every time there's a story about the almanac, they have to talk to somebody in the weather service who uses some term about us. It's kind of condescending. This year it was that we are tomfoolery. Well, I don't think we're tomfoolery. I think what we do is long-range weather. We're a bride's best friend. People refer to us for vacations, and like you say, we're pretty accurate. I mean, spot on is what I heard the last couple of winters, and of course this winter coming up is going to be somewhat controversial because there's been talk of an El Nino, a Godzilla El Nino, whereas we're calling for a very different kind of winter. And if I look at Canada and I go to the Maritimes, I say it'll be frigid and snowy, and then when I go to where you are, I say bitter cold and snowy, and then I move over to the west a little bit, I say very cold and snowy, then I say typical temperatures and very snowy, and then when you get to the western provinces, we say mild and dry.
So
I'm so sorry, but actually, you know, anybody who's listening to this can just quickly go online to farmersalmanac.com and they can click on the Canadian weather map or the U.S. weather map, depending on where they want to go.
So what you're saying is the meteorologists aren't your best friends? They don't love you? And
Well, no, that's not true. I think many do, but there's always somebody that the people that write the story always can find who will say that nobody can do it more than 7 days out. But then again, 199 years, we're still doing it. And I'm not in anybody's face either. It just is what we do, and I think we do a good job. And then we try to tie all of that in with the articles that are in the almanac that help people live a good life. I mean, we have something this year about don't buy it, make it. So you can make your own butter. You can make your own sweet pickles. You can make your own sauerkraut. There's a lot of things that we can do. I mean, in fact, I think the more complicated life gets, the more people want to be able to just do it themselves. And whether it's growing food because of bad food that comes from different places or chemicals, or if it's trying to make your own bread. We have a big article this year on gluten breads, you know, whether gluten's good or bad, and wheats, and what you should know about that. And there's 10 ways to naturally combat pests. I think we're sort of like the natural almanac, because there's things that you can put in your hair, like eggs or beer, and it cleans your hair just like shampoos do. Some of it sounds a bit bizarre, but there's lots and lots of things that we can do for ourselves. And we even have a story about stargazing. You know, when you're in Canada, the stars are a little brighter, and so we have I think six steps on how to be a good stargazer, and we take you point by point from binoculars to telescopes.
Well, it sounds like this year with the do-it-yourself kind of stories, the make-your-own-stuff kind of stories, and that coupled, of course, with the weather, that you probably are very much in line with many environmentalists who talk about climate change and cutting back on some of the things that we purchase to help offset that.
Well, and I think that's true. I'm not so much that everything I do that I'm doing as a human being is ruining the world, because the climate change has been changing forever. And, you know, whether it's climate change, whether it's global warming, whether it's pollution, or whether, you know, you have 7 billion people on the planet who are all consuming products. But the fact of the matter is, farmers back in the 1800s didn't just throw things away. They just figured out how to do something differently if they needed to. And I think that that's somewhat empowering to people, to think that they can actually do something for themselves and they don't have to buy something else or buy 10 different cleaners. You know, if you just had baking soda, vinegar, lemon juice, and borax, you actually could clean, scrub, deodorize everything that there is. And for example, if you have a hole in the wall, like a nail hole, you take some toothpaste, it's just white toothpaste, put it on the hole, paint over it, and you're good to go.
Wow.
If you have a pot that's caked with, you know, something is burned onto a pot, you take anything that has tomato in it, could be spaghetti sauce or anything that has tomato in it, put a little bit of water, boil it, and it peels it right off.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to try
and
that
over
one.
Over the weekend, I was walking, going shopping around L.L. Bean, and the ground was so wet that my feet were soaked, and I didn't do this yet, but I have a hint here that says, for an extra pair of socks in your glove compartment of your car when you need it to get to go shoveling or you step in a puddle. And very simple, very basic, but you know what? I wish I had done that.
Looking at, again, this latest edition of the Farmer's Almanac, which is the 2016 edition, one of the things you talk about is a sweet pickle muffin on page 28, I believe.
We had a muffin contest last year, and the resulting muffins, and they had to be unique winners, or unique items. So we received, I don't know, 500-600 muffin recipes that were just unusual things. For example, the number two winner was double chocolate black bean and avocado muffins. And then we had sweet pickle and cream muffins, and then we had some Moroccan muffins with, I don't know, five or six unusual things. So every week, somebody was, I had one person here who used to be a baker, so she was making all these. Well, we didn't make 500, but she narrowed it down to like 15. We had a contest where we got to eat these muffins, but she wouldn't tell us what was in them beforehand, and then we ate them, and then we rated them. So that was last year, and then this year we're doing everything lemon contest. So if anybody has a recipe that with lemons that's a bit unusual, we'll be awarding prizes, and you go online to the website, and that's where you can find it. And I do hope people will go online and Facebook us, and also go for our newsletter, which comes out every Wednesday with some items in it. That's free of charge, and I've got about 300,000 people that are doing that. And you know, it's a way to explore with us, and you know, go to my website, use it, and there's videos, there's all kinds of material that I think help people get through life, and it's not nearly as bad as it seems on television.
When you start working on a new edition of the Farmer's Almanac, do you ever sit down thinking, gosh, you know, we've done this since 1818. Is there something we haven't covered that we can put in the next edition?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think every edition you need to have something on dogs and cats. So we have something about how to keep good health for your dogs. You know, they're a little bit obese. They might have dental problems just like the rest of us. And so you always have something on dogs. I think there's some categories that you always have, and you know, something on gardening, something on the sky. And so you kind of take a different angle on these things. And then you try to figure out, okay, what is it that really bothers people? What is it that would be helpful? And so we have a number of writers, and we have a number of sort of a panel of people who advise us on either trends or needs. And it just starts from there. And, of course, the next issue is going to be the 200th issue. So we'll have to throw in some of the history, some of the, you know, what was it like to be a farmer in 1818 or 1900, and now today, what does it all mean? And we should be able to have some fun with the, not that there's 200 issues that are really exciting. If you go back into the early 1800s, it really is not that exciting. But find out some little trips that were a little bit different back in those days and how it was worded. And that's kind of fun. Well, look at the past to know what the future is going to be.
Well, the great thing about the Farmer's Almanac, and this is an overused term, but in this case it really applies, it does have helpful hints, and it's always a very fun read. And I know for a fact, a lot of people, they get the Farmer's Almanac, and it's one of the things they never throw out. It may say 2016 on it, or 2010, yeah, or whatever, but people hold on to these things because there's always some information that you can always go back to and go, yeah, that's very important.
Well, I think it's one of the reasons why when people call me or write to me and say, oh my God, I got an 1869 almanac, it must be worth a lot of money. And I say, well, you know what, not really. People saved almanacs. And so even though it might be 18-something, it's not necessarily all that that valuable, unfortunately. But however, people can always try to sell them. There's also a story, by the way, because in 1816, the summer of 1816 was the summer without a summer. And so we have a story about that in right at the beginning of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac about that particular summer. And it was really because it was a volcano eruption, there was a volcano eruption that was so bad that it actually cooled down the entire Earth. And so that particular year, there was no summer in the Northern Hemisphere. People actually, in the maritime provinces, froze to death. Food crops were killed, and it became quite the problem. So 200 years later, we wonder whether or not it is going to be another year without summer. However, it was Mount Tambora in Indonesia. It was the biggest eruption in 1,800 years.
Wow. Again, the Farmer's Almanac is now out. What's the easiest way of getting a hold of a copy?
Is first go to farmersalmanac.com, and there's all kinds of ways of getting electronic versions, but there's also, we should be in all the stores, orange and green cover, and by all means, sign up for Facebook and for the newsletter, which is free, and I would love to hear from Canadians. I don't get enough correspondence with Canadians.
Thank you very much, Peter, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you very much, too. Enjoyed it.
Pete Geiger, the publisher and editor of the Canadian Farmer's Almanac. You can check out their website at farmersalmanac.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0315, and you'll find links to their website.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about Canadian aviation. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And of course, We do indeed have an idiot of the day. And lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, an elementary school teacher who was allowed to keep his job despite being late for work 111 times in 2 years said that breakfast is to blame for his tardiness. "I have a bad habit of eating breakfast in the morning and I lost track of time," 15-year veteran teacher Arnold Anderson said. In a decision filed August 19th by an arbitrator in New Jersey, rejected an attempt by the Roosevelt Elementary School in New Brunswick, New Jersey, to fire Anderson from his $90,000 a year job, saying he was entitled to progressive discipline. But the arbitrator also criticized Anderson's claim that the quality of his teaching outweighed his tardiness. Anderson was late 46 times in the most recent school year through March 20th and 65 times in the previous school year. Anderson said he was 1 to 2 minutes late at school at the most, but was prepared and was never late for class. "I have to cut out eating breakfast at home," he said. Anderson remained suspended without pay until January 1st. The arbitrator found that the district failed to provide Anderson with due process by not providing him with a formal notice of inefficiency or giving him 90 days to correct his failings before terminating his employment. Republican Governor Chris Christie referenced the case in a tweet. Christie wrote, "Think I'm too tough on teachers' unions? This is what we're dealing with in New Jersey." Anderson said he was very upset to be suspended, but conceded that losing his job would have been worse. When he returns to school in January, he said, "I will be early." Wow, a teacher suspended over food, and Governor Chris Christie weighs in with a tweet. "I'm not going to touch that. Just too easy." Sheriff's deputies have interviewed more than a dozen girls named Destiny trying to crack a vandalism case where someone spray-painted a prom invitation on a southwest Idaho cliffside. But Ada County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Patrick Orr said that the case remains unsolved. Authorities in May discovered the message, "Destiny? Prom?" question mark, painted in large pink and blue letters on the side of Black's Cliff, a popular rock climbing spot that's east of Boise. The person could face a misdemeanor charge of injury by graffiti, which is punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a fine of $1,000. The sheriff's office says new leads might emerge now that school is back in session. Officials have painted over the graffiti. Okay, I don't know what evidence they have, but is the sheriff's office aware of the fact that besides being a name, Destiny is a word? Maybe someone wasn't expecting a date with Destiny, but rather had overwhelming hope and promise for the importance of the prom. You never know. Anyway, two North Dakota State University students got a scare when armed police officers mistook their telescope for a rifle. Levi Jorenstad and Colin Waldera were setting up a telescope behind their apartment when they were blinded by a bright light and told to stop moving. They couldn't see who was shining the light and presumed it was a prank by other students. An officer on patrol had spotted the two and thought the telescope was a rifle. He said he thought Jorenstad's dark sweater with white lettering on the back looked like a tactical vest. He called for backup and the officers confronted the students. Police say the students were never in danger and that it was a situation of better safe than sorry. Gee, do you think any of the cops yelled out, "Reach for the stars"? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an 81-year-old Connecticut man has been accused of performing a sex act with some shrubbery. Police told the Connecticut Post they arrested the Stratford man after a neighbor showed them a video that he took of a naked man in the bushes outside his home. Police said the neighbor told them he confronted the man, who then stopped the indecent behavior, covering himself with a grill cover, apologized, and then went into his own house. The man was charged with public indecency and second-degree breach of peace. He was released after posting a $10,000 bond pending a future court date. Do you think perhaps he misunderstood the definition of bush? Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Larry Milbury publishes books on aviation. His latest is called Aviation in Canada, The CAE Story. It chronicles the rich history of the aviation giant. Larry joins us on the line right now from Toronto. Hi, Larry.
Hi there, Peter.
I'm guessing a lot of people, even Canadians, aren't really aware of what CAE is and what it does.
Well, that's true, especially outside of Montreal, unless people are shareholders, and of course there are hundreds of thousands of CAE shareholders by now, people tend not to know about some of our high-tech treasures, you know.
What made you decide, because as I mentioned, you've written several aviation books, what made you decide that the CAE story was the story you wanted to tell this time?
Okay, well, it seems like it's just sort of closing a gap. I've been writing histories or publishing histories over the decades of Canada's aerospace giants, from Avro to de Havilland and Canadair, Pratt & Whitney Canada down in Longueuil and so on. And one that not only I hadn't yet covered, and nobody else had ever written a history or published a history of CAE. So it was time to do that. And so I started in the spring of 2011 and did about 4 years of research, full tilt. And just recently, as a matter of fact, yesterday, just got my shipment of books from my printer.
So you've done these aviation books. You know a thing or two about the industry, yet you've done, as you said, 4 years of research into CAE. So someone as learned as yourself, who knows a lot about what this industry has to offer, what were some of the surprises, if any, that you found in digging into CAE?
Yeah, well, for one thing, it seemed a little bit of an obscure company to start with. It was really in the war surplus business for the first few years, buying a lot of old junk from Second World War, scrapping it out, recycling it, finding new uses for it, and gradually, kind of almost by accident, found itself in the flight simulation business. Now, flight simulation among people in aviation and certainly aviation readers is not an exciting thing. Mind you, that's it in reality is exciting, but people don't see it that way. So the more I delved into the story, the more excited I became myself. So this company moved from being almost a scrap war surplus company to getting some contracts up in the Arctic even before the Dew Line in the 1950s to do with long-range navigation. And about this time, the Canadian government had on order a new jet fighter, which became the CF-100, which first flew around 1950. And for that, the Air Force decided that it would like to have a flight simulator to train its pilots and navigators for this new fighter. And CAE bid on the contract, and in those days it was a $2 million contract, which was an awful lot of money, and they won it. And I think they won it because the founder of CAE, Ken Patrick, had been a fairly high-ranking RCAF officer during the war and a very renowned fellow in the world of radar. And Patrick had a lot of connections up in Ottawa, especially in and around C.D. Howe's office, the great minister of everything in the wartime and post-war years. And so in that way, CAE fell into the flight simulation business, and that's how it really all got started. And today the company holds about a 75% market share around the world in commercial flight simulators, right up to the great giant Airbus 380.
Okay, so you say Ken Patrick had an aviation history that people in Ottawa respected, but from his company's point of view, I mean, as you say, they started in scrap metal, literally. Did he have to do any convincing to his own company or to those working with him that, you know, this is a direction we want to go in, flight simulation from where we were before?
Well, let's see. The company was founded in 1947, so it wasn't too long a wait before they got themselves into flight simulation in the late 40s, 48, 49. So, and they quickly, I'm sure Ken Patrick, about whom, by the way, not much is known, and even CAE itself, when I started the project in 2011, they knew very little about Ken Patrick. I was able to track down some close connections of his, but Ken was a go-getter, and he was known. For example, there is an early article in the Montreal Gazette featuring Ken, and the theme of it was Ken Patrick, the visionary. You wouldn't believe it, but Ken Patrick actually envisioned the self-driving car, for example, which is only now becoming such a big thing with Google and others. And so he was a visionary, and so any kind of a new idea, he gravitated towards it. And in this way, by the way, he lost his company a lot of money because he would get into things that were really, really hardly proven, invest a lot of money, and then the thing would just fizzle out. But on the whole, he kept the company going for as long as he was there, which was until about the mid-1950s when he moved out of the company and a fellow called James Tooley took over.
You talk about his pioneering spirit and the fact that he took the company in directions, some of which were successful, some which were not. Do you think part of his success was literally the time he was working in? In other words, could someone do what he did today, or would they have to deal with board of directors and shareholders and the like and be literally handcuffed from doing the kinds of things that he did back in 1940s and 50s?
Yeah, well, believe it or not, CAE did have a very solid board of directors right from day one. Some very powerful Montreal money men were behind Patrick because he was a fellow who didn't have the millions of dollars that was needed. And, for example, two of the fellows who invested very early and ultimately owned the company by the early 1950s were Heward Stikeman and Fraser Elliott. Now, their law firm, Fraser Stikeman Elliott, is still a prominent Montreal law firm. So these fellows were keeping a very tight eye, very careful eye on what Ken Patrick was doing with their money. For example, when the CF-100 flight simulator was rolled out in the mid-1950s, there was a vice president from one of the banks present, and somebody observed that he was probably there to make sure that not too much money was being spent on the crackers and cheese and the wine.
When you look at these companies like CAE, is their glory days behind them, or do they also have just as bright a future as they've had a past?
Yeah, well, there's always been this tremendous future for a company like CAE, and CAE in particular has gone from one fantastic era to the next. Now, for example, they not only did flight simulators, but then they got into the world of training simulators, well, let's say in one case for nuclear power plants and for great hydro plants. For example, those who work at the Grand Coulee Dam have for several decades been training on a massive CAE control room simulator, which when you go into it, it appears to be the actual simulator, but it's really a training device, the actual control room, but it's actually a training device. They then also produce control systems for some of the Canadian Navy ships. They introduced digital controls into Canada's fleet of destroyers, for example, back in the 70s and 80s, so that a lot of the those big wrenches that need turning and this sort of thing in a ship are now all done by digital computer control. The latest thing with CAE is they've entered the field of medical simulation, so that they are training nurses and doctors who will be in the operating room on computer programs. And also, by the way, they have, for example, full-size full-size, what would they call them, dummies.
Right.
On which doctors and nurses train these days.
Fascinating stuff indeed. This is yet another in a series of books that you've written. How many Aviation in Canada books have you put out now?
There are about 35 titles now, Peter.
Wow. And do you still have more to do?
Last year's, for example, the last titles were a pair of books which constitute another Montreal story covering the old Nordine Norseman bush plane.
Right. And do you still have others that you want to do? What are you working on next?
I have a history, an overall history of Canada's aviation industry from 1909 to the present.
And when is that one coming out?
That's a good question. At least 2 years.
Okay, we'll look forward to that one when it comes out, too. And they're all, we should mention, large coffee table size books, great stories, great pictures. The latest one entitled Aviation in Canada, the CAE Story. Thank you very much, Larry, for being on the program with us once again.
Thanks for the call, Peter. All the best.
Larry Milbury, author of Aviation in Canada, the CAE Story. You can check out Larry's blog at canavbooks.wordpress.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0315, and you'll find the link to the blog and also to their website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The world-famous Disneyland theme park in California may be known as the happiest place on Earth, but according to a new book, that hasn't protected it from being sued at least once per week in recent years. Best-selling author David Koenig has written several books that give a behind-the-scenes look at Disneyland, but his latest work focuses on how lawsuits have changed the Magic Kingdom. He says that while some of the lawsuits have merit, many are frivolous, and everyone who visits the park today loses because of them. One example is the huge number of warning signs that can be seen throughout the park now. He argues that the signs detract from what many visitors go there seeking, a brief escape from reality. Let's be fair, the reality today is that anyone with deep pockets is vulnerable to frivolous lawsuits. Several years ago, when Disney was sued over an injury, a jury decided it was only 1% responsible. Despite that, Disney had to pay 86% of the financial award. Is that justice? Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, The Stuff File presents The Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, from New York City, it is indeed Peter Franklin, The Gabby Cabby. Hello, sir.
Hello, 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 live from the beautiful streets of New York.
And I understand in the beautiful streets of New York, particularly around Times Square, is it true that there are some naked ladies?
Yeah, but you know, the whole thing is really stupid. First of all, to explain to you and your nice listeners, it is perfectly legal in New York City for a woman to walk around topless all the time, anytime they want. Most people don't know that. And occasionally during the summer, you'll see the occasional woman walking around topless. It's really weird. It's a strange law, but it's been there. Well, now along come these broads who I think have another occupation on the part-time days, who knows what that might be, and they've dressed themselves up by painting their bodies like the American flag. And what they do is that you, the unsuspecting or the naive tourist, comes along, and they say, how would you like me to stand next to you so that a member of your family can take a picture? And you say, golly, that sounds like fun. So you do it, and the minute they take the picture, they're going to ask you for money. And if you don't give them some money, there's going to be a big scene. So all of a sudden, like cockroaches, they're all over Times Square. And Adobe Mayor says, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Of course you can do about it. You can chase them out of Times Square. But he's not going to do it. So there we are with this really unsightly problem. And the worst part about it is, and excuse me for being a male chauvinist pig, these broads are really ugly.
So I take it you haven't had your picture taken with them yet?
No, mainly because I think it's stupid and mainly because they're ugly. I mean, what can I tell you? They are ugly people. I have a picture on my website that people can go take a look at it. And I picked out the best of the worst because I didn't want to make other people nauseous looking at these broads.
And people can see that on your website at www.gabby.com. Now, we have been hearing through the course of this recent election campaign on the Republican side, on the GOP, we have been hearing Donald Trump going on and on and on about illegals from Mexico. But I understand that there's an illegal situation in your neck of the woods, and it's not Mexicans.
Yeah, no, no. It's, I mean, in any large city in America, we have wall-to-wall people who are in this country who jumped the line and came in unfairly and wrong, and it's not being done in any way. For instance, in New York, Brooklyn, for instance, is huge areas of undocumented Russians. You go up to Wisconsin, Minnesota, you have oodles and oodles of people from Somalia. So it's not just the Mexicans. The Mexicans, of course, are the mainstay of all of that. But really, they have no legal right to be in the United States. I mean, that's the way it is. And people can warp and twist and talk about anchor babies and all that kind of stuff, none of which is true. It's just that they're letting all these people come in because they're cheap labor. So when you hear people talking about, let's build a wall, let's build a fence, let's keep the Mexicans out, let's throw them out, that's all nonsense. They don't want to throw them out. They want them to work at slave wages.
Meanwhile, since I mentioned Donald Trump, is there any truth of the rumor that you might become Donald Trump's running mate?
Who, me?
Yes, you.
No, I wouldn't be his running mate. That's not the point. Listen, he has struck a nerve. He's talking about things that people weren't talking about. And I got to tell you something. If you want to be objective about it, everything, whatever his motivations are, everything he's saying is 100% true. Many of these people, about 40% of them, signed a document that said they were coming to the United States on a student visa or a work visa or an entertainment visa, and that at the end of that period of time, they would leave. They haven't left. They left. So they're breaking the law. It's as simple as that.
Well, you just mentioned whatever Donald Trump's motivation for running is. What do you think his motivation is?
I think he's legit. He has a very good reputation in New York City. Prior to all of this, nobody was on his case. He's done many, many things for New York. He's a very active New York. And frankly, most New Yorkers are surprised about the unbelievable amount of venom that's being hurled at him. And it really is. And it's very, very organized. It's not just coming in. I mean, that guy from Univision, that wasn't by accident. He didn't just happen to stand up and go after Trump. That Megyn Kelly from
Fox.
Fox. Yeah, she didn't just happen to stand up. It's organized people who are going after him. And the reason, including the Republicans, because remember, whoever becomes president of the United States also becomes the head of the party. And the old-time Republicans are terrified that Trump is going to take over the nation and the party, and that's why they're being even meaner to him than the Democrats.
Okay, so you mentioned a few moments ago there's venom against Donald Trump. I understand there's some venom against Hillary Clinton, too. Did some woman actually put an anti-Clinton remark in her obituary?
Yeah. I mean, no, Hillary's going down a slippery slide. My prediction is she's going to be out of the election because of the antics, the millions of dollars that she and her husband have stolen. I mean, the woman got an awful lot of problems. But this lady had gave instructions to the funeral director or family that when I die, I want you to put this obituary into the paper. And the obituary said, in lieu of flowers, just don't vote for Hillary.
Wow, that's real anger there, I guess.
Wow. Terrible, you got to understand something, and maybe to explain this to your listeners. Everything in the United States is put in the terms of politics. In other words, if you say something against Obama, that means you're anti-black, anti-Democrat. If you say something against Trump, that means you're anti-Republican. If you say something about Hillary, anti-Democrat. But no, this goes beyond this. Hillary is a crook. She's an absolute crook. And she caused the death of a lot of people in Libya. So, I mean, you got to separate the two factors there. This is not politics. I think Obama is just about the worst president that the United States has ever seen. And I think he's done a tremendous amount of damage in actually promoting racism. Well, now if I say that, I'm accused of being a racist.
So you wouldn't want to repeal the law that wouldn't allow him to have a third term, is what you're saying?
Well, listen, if Obama wants a third term, he's going to take it just like that creep Bloomberg did. Bloomberg had two terms, and then he decided he wanted a third term as mayor of the city of New York, and the jerks on the city council let him do that because it meant they could also have a third term.
Meanwhile, let's look at a situation that happened with a New York Police Department horse. It actually bit a woman's finger off?
Yeah. What did your mother tell you about what you do? How do you feed a horse? You know how to feed a horse.
No,
calm
I don't.
Right?
No, my mother said stay away from horses. Don't feed them. Don't go near them.
But somebody at one time in your life said, feed the horse with your palm up. Well, what happened is the lady didn't, and the horse bit off her finger, which was really terrible. And the cop didn't even realize it. He got back on his horse, and he started to ride away, and he started yelling at the cop. This happened to happen in Times Square. It had no connection to the naked woman. But there was a picture of her hand, which I didn't put on the website. Put a picture of her on the website. But I didn't put a hand on it because it's really scary. You see that hand, man, you're never getting near a horse.
I'm never getting near a horse anyway. But we're almost out of time. I just want to mention, you had a celebrity sighting. And the celebrity sighting, I believe, Bill Clinton?
Yeah, he looked terrible. I was out in the Hamptons, which is the fancy beach area out on Long Island. And we happened to go to some place for lunch, and he was sitting there, and he really looked bad. And I mean, now again, don't start accusing me of being anti-Democrat, but he's not aging well. And I don't think it's because of the problem, because he and Mrs. Clinton are used to handling problems. He just looked like a tired old man. He did not look well at all. But hey, I got to see him, which is the first time I've ever seen him not in a motorcade.
And the thing that I was surprised about was not that you saw Bill Clinton, it was the fact that you were in the Hamptons.
No. The regular people go to the Hamptons. So you go to the Hamptons to see everything. Just because you're looking at the mansions or you're going to a very nice restaurant doesn't mean you can afford to have a house there or stay there. No. It's a very popular attraction for regular people. It really is.
Well,
I mean, I'm not promoting it, but no, that's not true. Everybody there isn't. You know, we're like the spectators, the regular people.
Well, I think you're selling yourself short, so you're not the regular people. You are a superstar in New York. People can find your website, as I mentioned earlier, which is www.gabby.com. They can send you an email to peter@gabby.com. Thank you very much, sir, for being on the program once again.
Take care. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have one more Stuff File news for you, and then, of course, you know what. Police in Simcoe, Ontario are looking for a thief with an apparent appetite for other people's shoes. Norfolk OPP says a passenger was in a vehicle in the drive-through lane at a McDonald's restaurant with their feet dangling out the side window. A young man then wandered by and yanked both shoes off the passenger's feet, then fled on foot toward a nearby car wash. Police described the suspect as white, about 18 years old, with dirty blonde hair and wearing a gray long-sleeve shirt with khaki pants and a blue hat on backwards. The shoes were gray Sanuk brand casual-style shoes, size 12. Well, that's what you get for leaving your big hooves hanging out of the window. It's not the brightest move someone could make, although it's not the dumbest move someone could make. Because that comes up now, because, yes, boys and girls, it's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A California man has been released from a hospital after an impromptu photo shoot with a rattlesnake that ended up with a predictable disaster. Alex Gomez of Lake Elsinore was hospitalized after he picked up a rattlesnake discovered in his backyard and took photos with the snake hanging around his neck. The photo shoot came to a premature end when the snake bit Gomez on the hand. "I'm shocked that he would have that thing around his neck," Gomez's mother Deborah said. "It could have bitten his neck, and that would have been it. That's just being a fool." Deborah, who shared her son's snake selfies with KTLA-TV, said she wanted her son to be embarrassed by his actions. "I told him the news people had been calling, and he said, 'Mom, you better not.' And I said, 'I'm going to. I'm going to teach him a real good lesson when he gets home.' No mercy for him," she said. Gomez was released from the hospital, but doctors said they will continue to monitor the venom in his system to ensure his hand injury doesn't worsen. Now, you know, I really like Gomez's mother, and you know why? Because clearly she knows that even though it's her own son, if you wrap a rattlesnake around your neck and take a picture, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0315. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0315. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont.
Getting Jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.